5 minutes after the hour. It is Thursday, November 5th on the morning show with Preston Scott.
Your Freudian slip is showing.
No, it's we still don't have one.
I know.
Still do not have a president, and it is perfectly understandable why. We're going to get to all of this. I'm going to point out something that every single network is missing, including Fox News. We'll talk to Sal Nuzzo in the third hour to unpack a story that, quite frankly, he has been sharing with us and is rock solid on, and it's Arizona. We're going to get to irregularities in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, and is it no coincidence that those are states where governors and elected officials have been literally hostile to the Trump administration? Where courts have ruled against, and we're going to clear up the whole United States Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. It's a mess, and it's absolutely, as I said, totally understandable why. It was predictable. But we'll get to all of that. Start with our verse of the day. Matthew 5, 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Our bodies, and these kinds of parallels just happen over and over and over. You have to feed your body. If you watch any of the survival shows, Dual Survival, Alone, heck, even Bear Grylls, for all of the phoniness that that show offers, any of these types of programs, you learn you must have water, and over time, you must have food. You cannot go without both. You can't. You can fast for a period of time, but you can't do that with water. You better have water. But we don't treat our spirit the same way. We don't treat our soul the same way. And yes, there's a difference between the two. You're born with a soul. You are given a spirit. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. When we miss time with God, there's a price. All I'm asking you to consider as you, again, send the kids out the door, is that you make certain that you, as the head of your home, set the example for your kids and challenge them to follow you. And depending on their age, you give them that choice. I think when they're younger, they follow along. They do it with you. When they're older, they make that choice for themselves. But if you are wondering, what's going on? I'm just unsettled. I'm telling you right now, first, all of this stuff going on, I'm not losing a minute of sleep over any of this. Ultimately, there's nothing that's going to happen where God's going to go, well, I'll be me. Didn't know that was going to happen. So I do my best to try to find that time every single day. For me, it's the drive to work. But find time knowing that your spirit is hungry and thirsty to feed it. Can't feed it with a drive-thru. You can't feed it with whatever the meal is at home, sitting in the fridge, in the freezer. You can't nuke it. You've got to take time with God. Spend time with his word. You're saying, I don't even know where to begin. Start with the Lord's Prayer. That's a guide. It's not, that's, by the way, those aren't the magic words. Jesus said, pray like this. Here's a guide. Here you go. You start there. 10 minutes after the hour, this date in history, and Operation Thanksgiving. I got an update for you. We'll start to unpack this show today, but I promise you today, I don't want to sound like Glenn Beck. Let me just stop right there. It's the morning show.
Morning show with Preston Scott.
You're killing me, Smalls.
News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
All right, quick look at this date in history. 1994, former President Ronald Reagan announced he had Alzheimer's. 1912, Woodrow Wilson defeats incumbent William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt to become the 28th U.S. president. 1912. 1889, Wyoming citizens approved the first state constitution granting full voting rights to women. Look at that, Wyoming. By the way, do you see the Wyoming vote total? Like 80% for President Trump. Wyoming. 1862, frustrated by Union troops' lack of success, Abraham Lincoln removes George McClellan from command of the Army of the Potomac. That was a fateful decision that was good for the nation. McClellan ended up running against the president. I didn't realize that. I didn't connect the dots that it was McClellan in 1864 that Lincoln beat. Beat him by a ton. Just spanked him. Consequential election. I have said this one is as consequential as that one. McRibs. I didn't give it due time yesterday. McRibs are coming back for national release for the first time since 2012. Across the country, it's not going to be restaurants can choose. They're all going to carry the McRib. Yes, yes, yes. And by the way, I get this email yesterday. Stan says in his subject line, McRib fanatic too, but he goes further. Thanks for your show, what you all do for our community. I, too, am a fan of McRib sandwiches. They are made of pork shoulders, a.k.a. Boston butt. My family were pork producers for many years. When McRibs were being sold, the live hog sale price went up 3-4%. We farm in Jefferson County, but sold hogs to Sunnyland in Quitman. Even here, pork producers were glad to see another outlet for quality pork and boost the sale price. Thank you, Stan. So there you have it. Boston butt, pork shoulder. And I'm just fine with that. The vice president of menu innovation for McDonald's says to our customers, it's become more than a delicious saucy moment. It's a season. It's taking the internet by storm. Yes. I've been telling you people this for years. There are websites, McRib Watch, that are out there that post where McRibs are showing up. We don't need that this year. December 2nd is the date.
Do they have to change the name now? Now that we know that it's the McShoulder?
Why in the world would they? My goodness. We've called that a Boston butt for how long, and it's nowhere near the rear end.
Well, okay, the McButt. I mean, it's not a rib.
No, but who cares? Who cares?
It's just a calorie delivery device, Dallas. Quit being so specific.
All I know is on December 2nd, it'll take one McMinute for me to get a McRib in my McMouth and McMunch.
Well, I am McSorry.
It is a glorious thing. Hold the onions, hold the pickles, bring on the tangy barbecue sauce, and step aside. And hopefully they lather that thing with enough sauce that you have some for the fries to dip in. McRibs are coming December 2nd. Don't think for a second I won't be doing the countdown. I'm telling you now, I'm putting it on the rundown effective today. We come back, Operation Thanksgiving. You heard of it? If you haven't, I'll tell you about it, give you an update of how we did on day one. That's coming up next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA. today on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
This is crazy!
An iHeart's radio station.
Morning show with Preston Scott. I'm Preston. Dallas Rogers over there in Studio 1A. It took a tremendous amount of mental effort to come to the conclusion that since today has already begun, we have 26 days until the McRib. And so there's your number, and I will be counting it down. You can bet your last dollar. And the week before, I will be beside myself. There'll be two of me sitting here. Anyway, Operation Thanksgiving. It started for me when I got the annual Samaritan's Purse Christmas gift catalog. And this gift catalog gives you suggestions on ways that you can do something this Christmas that can change a life. We've circled the following items in this catalog that we are supporting. My wife and I. Care for mothers and babies. It reaches women in countries like Iraq, Vietnam, Niger, with breastfeeding support, education in child health and nutrition, and other resources. Knowledge. Knowledge. There's farm and garden projects in Bolivia, Haiti, and Kenya, where you provide a farming family with resources and seeds and tools and training so they can harvest food for themselves and to perhaps make money. $55. $55. That's it. Buy a dairy goat for $70. Milk for the family. You can help them get cattle. Honeybees. One guy's able to provide for a living for his family by making honey and selling it. And so this is a gift that provides a starter hive and training. It's $20. How about chickens? For $14, a starter flock of a dozen chicks that grow to produce eggs. Think about the difference that makes to a family that just needs food. $14. These are, and there are larger projects. And the larger project that we've signed up for, and I've asked you to join me, and I say we, meaning us, the radio station show, morning show, is I've asked to find 500 people to give $20. If we have 500 people give $20, we raise $10,000, and we are going to drill a water well, drill, equip, so that a village in Cambodia, in the northwest provinces, one particular province that I can't pronounce, I've got it, but I, yeah, whatever, they will have clean drinking water for the village because of your efforts. We'll get, I'm working with Samaritan's Purse to get maybe even a call when they go to the village the first time and break the news. We're coming. Group of people in America have stepped up and they are putting a well in your village and working on getting video when they begin to drill and after a video compilation that you'll get to see. And maybe a phone call from that village in Cambodia the day it happens. The day that well produces water and is turned on for the first time officially. You know, you strike well water, it comes up, and then you put the equipment in and you harness it, and you've got it that first day that it's dedicated and turned over to the village. We'll hopefully have video and maybe even a live phone call. But on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Preston Scott Show, we've got a link, and it takes you to a WFLA landing page. You click to give, and it takes you to a page for this gift. But understand, they are tracking how many people come from that landing page so they know how to credit it to this specific village. We're the only ones giving to this village. They've trusted us to raise the money for this one village. And so it begins. Yesterday we raised $700. It's a start. The goal is this to be raised and done before Thanksgiving. If you can give, however much you can give, go to the website and give. Let's make a difference in Operation Thanksgiving here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Someone has to say it. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Okay, we're going to just roll this with the understanding it could be a little difficult to hear parts of it. James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, got a tip, made a phone call, and was speaking to a alleged Postal Service worker in Michigan. Voice has been altered. You'll get, we think, the most important parts out of this, but I do have the transcript. You decide for yourself if he's a postal worker based on his knowledge and what happens.
Tell us where you work.
I work in the Traverse City Post Office, more specifically the Barlow branch.
Your boss told you and your colleagues something that shocked you this morning. What was it?
We were issued a directive this morning to collect any ballots we find in mailboxes, collection boxes, just outgoing mail in general, separate them at the end of the day so that they could hand stamp them with the previous day's date. Today is November 4th, for clarification.
Who is your boss, and what is his title?
Jonathan would be a direct supervisor, yes. As of right now, he is the opening supervisor for the Barlow Branch Post Office. So I, and this is anecdotal, carrier down at another office said they watched the postmaster doing it. If it were just a typical day, it would be clerks doing it up at the distribution center.
So 8 p.m. election day, November 3rd, the Court of Appeals ruled ballots have to be received by that time. And what were you told?
To separate them today so they could mark them with yesterday's date and send them through the express system to wherever they needed to go.
This appears to be an attempt to circumvent Michigan law and allow late votes. And you said there was a hamper where letter carriers were supposed to leave their ballots. Where are the ballots now?
They were putting them into express bags to go to the distribution center. In regards to a hamper, there was a standard hamper that all letter mail is supposed to go to, and they had a tub next to it that we were supposed to put any ballots collected today into.
Yes. What made you come forward?
That's sketchy. I don't like sketchy. It screams corruption. Also, knowing the post office's leanings politically, it didn't seem quite right.
What is your message to other postal workers who see things like this?
Report it. How are we supposed to have any integrity in this country if we are just going to let things slide based on a scaling issue?
Are you afraid of retaliation against you?
I've had whistleblower policies backfire on me in the past, so yes.
We'll have to reach out to Jonathan Clark for comment.
Hey, is this Jonathan?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a reporter with Project Veritas, James O'Keefe here, and I have information that you guys have been stamping ballots with the previous date, November 3rd. He just hung up the phone on me.
And there you have it. United States Postal Service Inspector General's office has been made aware of these allegations. Considering actions, it is under their purview. This is such a predictable problem. And it is exactly why. I mean, look at where the problems exist in states where governors and elected officials have been hostile to the president. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. But there's more, much more. I'll get to that next on The Morning Show.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
There are so many lessons to learn here. Number one, there needs to be a federal election law as it relates to mail-in balloting that standardizes the process across the country for federal elections. However you want to handle a state or local race, that's up to the states. But when it comes to federal elections for Congress, the U.S. Senate, and the president, there needs to be a standard uniform rule, law, if you will. They must be received and counted by election day, like Florida does. None of this, well, they could come in later. Nonsense. That is absurd. There is zero reason for that. If you're going to go the route of promoting mail-in ballots, there needs to be a deadline, and they have to arrive just like a ballot does. Must arrive and be counted on election day, no later than election day. Anything after that, sorry. If it comes later, sorry. I guess you should have mailed it a week earlier. I guess you should have hand-delivered it. I guess you should have voted in person. That's number one. Number two, Arizona is not Joe Biden's. Fox is wrong. They're all wrong. There is credible reason to believe that Donald Trump will end up winning Arizona. Now, does that prove to be a difference maker? I don't know. But the math that you're seeing has Joe Biden with Arizona done. It's not done. Trump officials on the ground say that the president will win Arizona by 10, 12,000 votes. We'll see. We'll see. But it is not settled. Michigan, they are not, Pennsylvania, they're not allowing them to accurately watch the counting of ballots that are coming in. Poll watchers are being kept 100 feet away. How do you verify a signature? How do you verify the vote?
Why are they doing that? I mean, like, who?
Because they're doing it.
Wow.
And so the president has filed lawsuits in Pennsylvania, in Michigan. He is demanding a recount in Wisconsin. There are great points being made. All of a sudden, thousands and thousands of votes turned up in the middle of the night. Could it be that these votes were there just in case? I don't know. What I know is there are people that watch with great regularity voting trends. And yes, more people voted this time total than any election in history. But there are trends inside of any community. There are voting trends that exist. And when you factor in even expanded numbers, there are votes that came in certain jurisdictions that defy logic. And so the bottom line is Joe Biden could end up being president. Donald Trump could be reelected. We don't know yet. The theory is that the president doesn't need Michigan or Wisconsin. Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Arizona deliver the necessary electoral votes. I believe that number gets to 276. If you get to Alaska, it might be 279. But even Fox News is wrong on Arizona. When I asked Sal Nuzzo from the James Madison Institute, who will join us later to explain some of this, why? He said, because the news desk at Fox News hates Trump. Could it be that simple? I will tell you this. When we come back, The polling was so egregiously wrong, it was worse than 2016. We'll get to that story next on The Morning Show.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Shazam!
News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
It's 52 minutes after the hour of The Morning Show. You know, it, as I wrote in my blog this morning, when you and I go vote, at least here in Florida, it's been so long since I voted in Arizona. I in my mind, I want to say we punch stuff out, but I couldn't remember. I wouldn't swear to it. But here in Arizona, you get a felt pen and you fill it in an oval. Or in Leon County, rather. You fill in an oval. But you go, you are handed a ballot, right? You vote. You have a folder that you cover the ballot in so people can't see your vote. And you hand the cover to the election worker. They stand back as you put it in the machine and it goes away and you wait for the ding and it shows your vote's been counted. And you walk away. You get the ballot. You vote. You put it in the machine. How many sets of hands? Yours. No one else touches it until it's done. And then they're sealed and kept as a backup in case there is an electrical malfunction in the tabulation. They have a paper backup. And to me, in its simplicity, it is the best way to vote. You tabulate it. There's an optical scanner. And in case there's a question, you have the backup of the ballot. The actual paper ballot. All right. Now, you vote by mail. There's not one person listening to me right now that can tell me with any degree of certainty how many sets of hands have touched your ballot. Can't do it. You can guess, but you don't know.
Well, for that matter, you don't even really know if your ballot is the one that went through counted as your vote. It could have been a completely different card with your name stuck to the top.
No clue.
None.
Got a note here. In Michigan, there were 184,000 mail-in ballots added at 3 a.m., and not one of them was cast for Trump. That's one of the stories.
Yeah, that's statistically impossible.
Completely.
100% impossible.
And so, you know, is it true? I don't know. I don't know. What I do know is when you go to a mail-in process, and this, we talked about this ad nauseum, it is expected. Mail-in voting is for a very few number of people. Those who cannot get to the ballot box and those who are out of the state, out of the country. That's it. It wasn't supposed to conduct a general election. It's not able to do that. And it's rife with opportunities for fraud. But the numbers, because of the numbers of mail-in ballots previously, were so low, it statistically wouldn't make much difference other than Florida 2000 and a handful of other races over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But just look at it just with a degree of common sense. Mail-in balloting, and that's why there have to be federal national standards for mail-in balloting. But that doesn't change where we are right now. I don't know about you, but I'm enjoying the fact that Michael Bloomberg is $100 million less rich. He spent $100 million in Florida, Ohio, and Texas, and Dems still lost. Yes! So not only did he blow $1 billion running for president, how long did that last? Half hour?
Yeah.
But yeah, didn't net him a thing. Great money spent. Thank you, Mike. whose polling was more accurate? All of the national polling or Donald Trump's? Steve Stewart next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Go hour number two of the morning show with Preston Scott. It is Thursday, November 5th. We still don't know who the president is, but we do know who's sitting in the chair next to me. Dallas Rogers is across the way in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B, and joining me is the executive editor of Tallahassee Reports, Steve Stewart. Hello, sir.
Good morning. First day I felt normal here. I was up so late on Tuesday and don't recover like I used to, Preston.
I got news for you.
It doesn't get any better.
Nope. I'm ahead of you by a couple years at least. So, yeah, bad news. It's going to get worse. I want to ask you about, you know, Frank Luntz, noted Republican pollster with Fox, who was very critical of the Trump campaign. Whatever anyone thinks about him, he said something I thought was interesting ahead of the election. He said, if the polling is wrong again, our industry's over. Not only was it wrong, Steve, it was historically wrong, as in they predicted Wisconsin was a 17-point win by Biden by likely voters, and it's anything but that. What do we do now moving forward?
Well, I disagree with him in the sense that it's over, because, I mean, right now, people just want, they want to be, they want to feel good, so they're going to, if there's a poll that makes you feel good, somebody's going to buy it. And I think that's the thing we got to look at here is, are they doing this to make people feel good, or is there just a problem polling? I've done a lot of reading on this. There's problems at polling, technically. Mm-hmm. There's just issues, and there's some people that get it and can be right a certain amount of time. And there's some people that, some of the same people that got 2016 right got 2020 right. So we need to start looking at what they're doing. But the question of where national polling is going, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if this is just like wrestling. Is that they just, look, you want a poll? I can do it. And they put it on the, you know, they put it on the station that favors one group, and that's all they want to see. I mean, that's the point. So
is the polling being done, though, allegedly after 2016 and the errors that were in the polling? The polling industry allegedly was making adjustments and changes in how they went about doing things. It got worse in 2020. Is it, though, designed to manipulate the vote?
That's the thing. The evidence would tend to say yes, because they know what the problems are. I mean, you can't ask 25 questions, okay?
Right.
And you can't, and you've got to, listen, there's a study that said that conservatives will hang up five times more than liberals or progressives when you're polling.
Yeah.
Well, that takes a lot of work to overcome that. And you can't just, you know, get a response from conservatives and then multiply it by four to get your number up, because then whatever error is in that, you know, is
amplified as
right.
well.
And so, look, there's technical issues, but in the end, I think a lot of these polling companies just want to get numbers out there to, like, to your point, is to, you know, to have an emotional impact on what's going on. And so, is the industry done? I think it's done from a credible standpoint, but so is the media from that standpoint.
And that really is the larger issue I wanted to get to, was that the polling industry is reflective of the mainstream media right now.
Exactly.
In that the facts really don't matter all that much. And again, I'm going to go back to in Wisconsin, the ABC Washington Post poll days before had Biden winning by 17 points of likely voters. And if we accept that Joe Biden won Wisconsin, it's by less than 1%.
So where's the credit? The credit, like you said, though, that's about credibility. So nobody believes the news anymore, right? And nobody's going to believe polls. So it's just, so the question is it going to change? I think, you know, one of the issues is that if Trump goes on to win, even if he doesn't go on to win, just based on how close this is, I think that the media is going to take a hit on, you know, the way they were reporting. So we'll see if that changes at all. Anyway, I think the key word is credibility, and the whole system, you know, in terms of the media and voting. I think, you know, if you look around the country at some of the things that are going on with the absentee ballot process, I mean, Florida got it right in a big way.
How about that?
Yeah.
Never thought we'd hear those words.
Exactly. But the problem is that, you know, that's another credibility issue. You got a close election and you've got results in, and it really, you know, this may not be what they're doing, but look, we're just going to count till our guy gets ahead and then we're going to stop.
Well, that's what it feels like.
I know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what we've been talking about is, well, what's the number we need? 183,000? Well, we have 184.
Instead of just counting before anybody knows the result and then releasing all the votes and then see where it falls. Now you've got like this, okay, we got to have this many votes. And that's, you know, that hurts the credibility and of the election system.
Steve Stewart with me. We'll turn to local results when we come back on the morning show.
Glenn Beck program. It's time to act like Spock. Stop feeling and just use reason. 9 to noon on WFLA.
Steve Stewart with me from Tallahassee Reports. We were just in agreement on there has to be a national standard for federal elections. There just has to be.
Yeah, I mean, the absentee process, you know, I remember when I was growing up, it used to be military overseas or if you had a medical exemption.
That's it.
And now it's like you've got these ballots just floating around and it's like currency, you know, and I don't know. I mean, it's funny, a tough issue.
Funny point on that. I've got a friend, I just talked to my friend about this yesterday. His cousin's, I don't know who, I don't remember the relationship, but anyway, their mother called and got them an absentee ballot. Like it was sent to him at his apartment, but he's not the one that requested it.
Yeah.
So how is that? Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not at all. Locally, though, we do run good elections here. Say what you will. They're, you know, the optical scanner, the backup with the paper ballot. We don't have the controversy with any local race. But boy, do we have some surprises.
Yeah. I mean, well, there were some surprises and there were things that sort of went, you know, according to plan. I mean, if you look at the local races, the city commission race went according to sort of what everybody thought. Bill Shack was a very aggressive campaigner and very emotionally, you know, involved in the race, and you know, hats off to him for that. But you know, it's a tough climb. Curtis Richardson won pretty easy in that race. The Leon County Commission at Large race that I had no idea which way was going to go. You had two first-time candidates with not much name ID. Was relatively close. Carolyn Cummings won. They were both, I would say, progressive Democrats in a nonpartisan race. So that race is going to be replacing Marianne Lindley. So that race was...
And Marianne Lindley comes off very moderate compared to these two.
Yeah, well, you don't know a lot. I know, yeah, I don't know. Carolyn Cummings, I interviewed a couple of times. It'll be interesting to see where she falls on some of this stuff. But there are differences within Democrats, as we're seeing. So we'll see where what happens there. The skip to the superintendent race, which again, sort of according to plan, which I find interesting there, looking at the numbers... You know, basically conservatives elected Rocky Hanna, and which I find sort of interesting because he's not really, some of the decisions and comments he made in the first 4 years really don't fit with that.
My theory is that COVID provided shield and shelter for him and basically got the attention off all those other things.
I think COVID benefits most of the incumbents, but definitely helped Rocky because... Listen, you'd hate to kick. It's not his fault, the COVID. You had to deal with a lot of issues.
And I actually thought he handled it overall very well.
Exactly. But the shocker, obviously, was District 4, longtime commissioner and chairman, Brian DeLoge. I don't know what to say. I
mean,
it
wasn't
close. Pretty bad. And, you know, I think a lot of people saw this coming. You never really know because you don't know how much of this is anecdotal. It's a district race. But I couldn't find people that were voting for him just among the circle of people that I was in.
And what do you think caused the demise? A handful of things added up.
I think it was years in the making. He hasn't been on the ballot in 10 years. That's not his fault. Just nobody ran against him, so I don't think he was used to retail politics. He won in the mid-2000s and really had no one challenge him. Became disconnected a bit with the district because of that. You don't have to run. And it's, you know, and you don't really find out the issues. The other thing is he really, you know, Brian is a registered Republican, but he really didn't have a conservative issue that he could hang on, you know, he could hang his hat on and say, look, you know, I was trying to get rid of the mask mandate. I'm not a supporter of the CSC, but
Brian was famous for saying, what good is a one vote against six? And he was never in favor of saying on principle, this is wrong.
Right. And that's not good when it comes to election time, you know, and I think, and then he made some mistakes, I think, in terms of just not really taking the opponent serious. And look, 14 years, It's a long time, and I think if you even he would look back and say, look, you know, that's a long time. People get tired of you when you make decisions, and he made some decisions probably that weren't reflective of his constituency.
Do you think the COVID mask ordinance that he was the face of, literally, because it was his signature on it, do you think it hurt him?
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely hurt him with the sector. I mean, he had no base of voters that were like, yes, I really support you on this. He was sort of all over the place on a lot of different issues, and so he was a man without a home.
There you go. Steve Stewart with me. One more segment from Tallahassee Reports. You want to get real information on what's going on, because you ain't going to find it in the mainstreamers. Go to TallahasseeReports.com.
WFLA at WFLAFM.com. On your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos. And iHeart's radio station.
A few more minutes with Steve Stewart, Tallahassee Reports. TallahasseeReports.com. Get the paper. Not only has the election cycle produced a lot of storylines that you'll get to follow and keep readers and listeners of the program in the loop about, you've got yourself one heck of an issue with the Children's Services Council.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things with it now being passed is that, and I was saying this at the break, you should subscribe to Tallahassee Reports just to get a watchdog on this committee, because this is going to be, look, this is a $100 million program over 12 years. You're going to have 9 people sitting on it. There'll be some elected officials on it. So this is something to cover. They're going to have monthly meetings. They produce budgets.
They don't even have a plan yet. So
no,
I mean,
but we'll be able to report on this. And the point that we were talking about is the 9 members, I think 4 of them are elected officials. I think superintendent, school board member, and I think there's a judge that's on there, and there's one other. But then 5 get appointed by the governor. But from what, and I got to look at the details of this, but the Leon County Commission submits a list to the governor, who then picks from that list. And I got to get the numbers of that, because as you were saying, that obviously is going to be very important. You'll be able to tell right off the bat if they're actually looking for critical thought on the committee, or if they're just trying to appoint people that are going to be just, you know, going along with whatever happens.
And does the governor have the ability to say, yeah, I need more people, I don't like this list?
Exactly. And then, you know, you're going to hire an executive director. And as we talked about during the run up to this, you know, that's going to, what are you going to pay them? You know, those jobs around the CSCs around the state, they're running anywhere from $180,000 to $300,000 a year. That's a high paying job.
For the children.
That's a high-paying job here in,
yes,
in Leon
you
County.
Call, sorry, I changed my name yesterday. What did you say?
No, Sal Nuzzo was doing that.
No, I got it first.
Yeah. But but the other thing about this is, you know, there was this issue about accountability, and I know and it's not a perfect structure by any stretch in terms of accountability, but there are some elected officials on here that are going to have to be careful, because the decisions that happen, they're going to get stuck with those. There's a school board member and a superintendent. And so we'll see what happens with that. But I mean, if something comes out of this commission, and you know, you can go to this elected official and hold them accountable for it. Just like with Blueprint, if there's a decision with Blueprint, there's elected officials on there, so you can, you know, that is.
Well, you could make the case that part of the reason why Brian DeLoge is no longer a county commissioner would be decisions made in Summerbrook, decisions made with Wilani Plantation and Killarn.
You could argue that Blueprint is the issue that helped unseat him. So there's not, so that's that, now that it's in process, there's going to be, so my point being, reporting on this is going to be the key.
Right.
Is what you don't want to have happen is them having meetings and spending money and nobody knowing about it. And so if we segue from the media perspective, when you get these incumbents that are retiring, like Marion Lindley or DeLoge, that are losing, you know, Tallahassee Reports, the people that are in office, we predate the people. There were a lot of politicians that we came in and, you know, look, Tallahassee Democrats is the newspaper. But now we've got people that are being elected that, you know, ran ads in Tallahassee Reports because they knew we had some kind of reach. So they know that there's more than one media outlet.
Yes.
So this is their condition that. So, and that's, you know, we get access. They know that they send us press releases. They call us and ask us, you know, listen, I'm going to be doing this, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good thing, too, for accountability.
Sure,
so
it is.
So we're looking forward to that, because we do have some new members. Obviously, that'll be taking seats. And so the CSC being new, listen, we had meetings with, they reached out to us, you know, because they wanted us to, you know, they were concerned that we weren't going to cover it fairly. So I met with them. So that's, you're getting a seat at the table to cover this stuff and to make it more accountable and transparent. So that's good news.
Do you sense, you said that they met with you, representatives of the Children's Services Council, or proponents,
right.
Or maybe more
advocates, yeah.
Yeah. Do you get the impression that they understand the concerns from a budgetary duplication and so forth standpoint?
Yeah, I think you can be, it's one of these things. I think they have good intentions for the most part. The point is, and what I made is, one of the things they never got back to me about was, look, show me three programs in Leon County that we spent money and you've got a measured outcome that changed.
Doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. And so, you know, that's the issue that we're going to be pursuing is, look, we're going to have a lot of money now. So let's, you know, if money can make a difference, let's measure it. And so, listen, you're going to get in the ground floor here of trying to build this. We're going to be there holding them accountable and saying, well, what's the measurement that we're looking for here? What needle are we moving? Because for 20 years, I mean, look at it. Everybody complains about Title I schools and the issues we have. I don't think anything's really changed in 15 to 20 years.
Would it be possible 3 to 4 years after you give this time that if the measurements don't show great improvement in Leon County, that citizens could put a referendum up to end it?
I think you could. I think you'd probably have a better job if it's failing, getting the county commission to say, look, we need to end this because it's just not, we don't have any measurements that's working. So we'll see.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Preston.
Steve Stewart, of course, Tallahassee Reports. Subscribe, TallahasseeReports.com, 27 past the hour.
Spin stops here. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
News team, assemble!
36 minutes after the hour. We're running late, so we'll get right to it. Bill Zimfer joins us. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Preston.
Bill, the latest, I'm just going to keep you focused where you live in Pennsylvania. Yep. What's going on?
Well, the vote count is continuing, but President Trump and his campaign have filed a lawsuit, first off, to try to get more access to that vote counting procedure, and second, they want the vote count stopped, and really to have the vote totals frozen where they are right now. Another part of the lawsuit, and they've joined in a separate lawsuit, to try to invalidate ballots that were postmarked on Election Day but haven't come in yet. I mean, because the way the ruling had been, a lower court had ruled, the Supreme Court actually tied 4-4 on it, kicking it back to the lower court, allowed those ballots to come in as late as Friday. So, what they're doing now is they're taking those ballots that may have come in yesterday, today, or tomorrow and separating them just in case there is a Supreme Court decision or even a lower court decision that would uphold this, that would invalidate those ballots. So that's what's happening in Pennsylvania right now. But in the meantime, that vote total continues to narrow.
We're hearing that there are actually ballots without signatures being counted, Bill.
Yeah, you know, this is an ongoing situation where the decisions are being made on whether ballots are valid or not, that probably, yes, these are things that should be reviewed, and some of these ballots should be questioned. There have been ballots in congressional races locally in the Philadelphia suburbs as well that have been challenged. But you know what, Preston, these are things that normally happen in mail-in balloting, but it's just a case that this year, because of all of the mail-in balloting and the scope of it, that it's become more of an issue. And I think it's something that should be reviewed. And right now, city officials in Philadelphia and county officials in the Philadelphia suburbs are saying that everything has been going relatively smooth, that there has been no evidence of any widespread irregularities.
However, you're still seeing that when it comes to watching, you mentioned the recount process or the validation yep. process, if you will, not a recount yet. That's Wisconsin that it's talking about yep. that. But that poll watchers are being kept 100 feet away. And you and I both know, no matter how good your vision is, you can't validate anything from 100 feet.
No, you can't. But, you know, the question there is, do you want to have somebody standing over the shoulder of someone processing ballots and stopping them every 2 minutes and saying, wait a minute, let's look closer at that. It would take you years to get through the counting process if you did that. There has to be some type of restriction, but there also has to be access to ballots when needed.
Bill, we've talked this morning. It seems to me that the Congress is going to have to move to, when it comes to federal elections, a standardized, standardized procedure nationwide, don't you think?
Absolutely. That's one of the things, the glaring things that has come out of this, Preston, where there's got to be some type of national standard on how votes are counted, when they are counted, and when they should be allowed, and when they should be stopped from coming in. No doubt, there has to be a national standard for that before the next presidential election.
Well, thank the Lord and pass the biscuits, because Friday's tomorrow, and we get the bill folder. Bill, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Preston.
All right, Bill Zimpfer with us this morning on The Morning Show. When we come back, Dr. Steve Steverson, some interesting things have happened in the world of pets as a result of the pandemic. We'll talk about that next.
Weekend weather on the 10s and the truth all the time. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Remember, if you want to take part in Operation Thanksgiving, drilling a well for water in a village in northwest Cambodia, just go to SamaritansPurse.org/WFLA. Time for pause for thought. Put a break on the show. Talk about our four-legged friends. Joining me, Dr. Steve Steverson of the Bradfordville Animal Hospital. Good morning, sir. How are you, Steve?
Hello.
Hey, Preston? There you are.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Your phone cut out there for a second. I was just mentioning that the pandemic has brought about some interesting situations because so many people are home spending more time with their pets. So are pets just being more unruly because their masters are home, or is it that the things they've been doing are just being noticed?
You know, Preston, it may be a little bit of both, but certainly we see a lot of unruly pets that, these pets had some behavioral issues and were unruly to begin with, but the owner is out of the house all day at the office and they come home and they keep saying, yeah, I need to do something about this. You know, my pet is not cooperating, not behaving, and but I don't have time to take care of this. And then all of a sudden we're locked away at home with our pets and we start, these problems become more and more and more obvious. So we've been seeing a lot of people that have, come in for some other medical issue or whatever, or even come in for this specific problem. Their pet's having some behavioral issues, and now it's time to do something about it. So we've sort of seen a large people decide now it's time to take care of this problem. It's the front of our brain now. Sometimes these things are simple things, just some little bit of obedience training and training a dog to work for everything that it does. Will greatly help with a lot of these little simple problems. Sometimes it's something more complicated and takes a more serious obedience training, and we will refer someone to an obedience trainer that's qualified and can help them with their problem. So it just depends on the pet and the situation, what we do about it.
Is it unique to dogs? Are cats so solitary in by nature that it's not really an issue with cats, or is it?
Oh, no. We see cats that have problems as well, completely different from what we see with dogs. But we will see cats that have some behavioral issues as well. Much, much more difficult to train a cat.
I was just going to ask you, I have in all my life, Steve, I have never heard of one person advertise and promote that they are a cat trainer other than Siegfried and Roy.
And we'll see how well that turned out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cats are much, much more difficult to train. There's some tricks and things you have to do. It's much more of a cooperative effort to train a cat than it is obedience training like it is for a dog. But it can be done.
It is virtually impossible, though, to do anything with a cat other than maybe manipulate it. I mean, if a cat just doesn't want to do something, I would think it's difficult to make them do it.
There are tricks and there are tips and ways to get a cat to work and cooperate with you.
What do you do with the? What do you do in practice? Like if a cat's not cooperating when you're doing a routine exam, do you have tricks that you employ?
Yeah, a lot of times it means just slowing down and allowing the cat to calm down and relax so that it'll cooperate. It's not like a dog that is more obedient. A dog wants to please us most of the time. So dogs we can work with a little more abruptly. Cats are, you have to take your time, be calm, make sure the cat understands that this is okay.
you are reinforcing my prejudice against felines. They are just so difficult.
I agree.
they are a unique animal. They're special. They are a great pet, but they're not a dog.
They're not for everybody, that's for certain, but then neither is a dog. So I get that. Steve, yeah. The moral to this story, though, is if you're noticing behavioral issues in your pet, they're not going to just go away. You're going to have to address it.
No question. And call your veterinarian. He can give you some advice and recommendations, or should give you some advice or recommendations, or refer you to an obedience trainer that can really help you out.
Steve, thanks so much for the visit. We'll talk in a couple weeks about the annual challenge of holiday feeding of our pets. Thanks so much.
Great. All right, looking forward to it.
Thank you, Dr. Steve Steverson with the Bradfordville Animal Hospital. Of course, you know what I'll recommend for dog training, dogpondkennels.com. 46 minutes after the hour.
Morning show with Preston Scott.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
There's enough out there to keep your clock wound way too tight to where you just break the springs. You know what I'm saying? Look, what we have to do here is we've just got to stay even keeled, go about your day, do what we do, pay attention to what's going on. When there are irregularities, let your voice be heard. You know, I just got a screenshot here, Fox 2, and a lawsuit filed in Detroit by Public Interest Legal Foundation. They found 4,788 duplicate registrations, 32,519 more registered voters than eligible voters in one area.
Wow.
2,503 dead people registered, and one voter born in 1823. Those are just irregularities in one area in Detroit.
So one vampire?
I would assume.
I mean, if we're going to be logical.
Someone who was alive during the assassination of Lincoln.
Maybe he planned it.
Yeah, maybe who knows?
Gosh.
But the irregularities, and I know that many of you are still scratching your head over something Bill Zimfer said. And I think most of us do think that, yes, there should be somebody over the shoulder of everybody counting. If we're counting votes in a contested election where ballots are being accepted after Election Day, and you're hearing stories in Michigan of postal workers saying, yeah, we were ordered to backstamp ballots that arrived after November 3rd. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you add these things up, first, what a shock. There's no surprise in any of this. And I'm not screaming and yelling. I'm just using common sense. When you and I vote, we get our ballot. We make our selections. We hand the outer folder to the election worker, the poll worker, and we insert our ballot in the machine to be read. And if you really want to, you can insert it through the folder so no one ever sees any part of the top of your ballot or the back of your ballot. You know, you can slide it in that way. I've done that many times.
When I went to put mine in, you can see the poll worker standing beside the thing. As soon as you start to put it toward the machine, the first thing you notice is their eyes go straight to your ballot. So it didn't make me uncomfortable because I don't care who knows what I voted
for.
But I mean, I can imagine as somebody that's very
guarded,
secret, you know, guarded, that would be a problem.
And so you just, you know, you can use that folder and you just cover it up and you feed the top part of it and you just hold that folder and let it be pulled out of it and you're good. But here's the thing. Only one set of hands touch your ballot when you vote in person, yours. At least in our county in Florida. Mail-in, and I'm going to keep making this point. You have not a single one of you can verify how many people touch your ballot. It is laughable. The difference now in any other election is margins, statistical margins. Previously, statistically, highly unlikely could swing a vote. Now, huge likelihood.
Yeah.
And so you have all these irregularities going on in states where, by the way, the elected officials are opponents of the president. They have vilified the president. They hate the president. You have Gretchen Whitmer threatening businesses in her state against her own state constitution. She's clearly willing to break the law. She's done it. She's been rebuked by the state Supreme Court unanimously. Not the vote that they reported, 5-4, for 4-3, it was a political vote by the Republicans. No, unanimously, before that, she got hammered. She exceeded her authority. Pennsylvania, you had officials saying the president was going to lose before the election. Jerome Hudson next. Five minutes after the hour, and it's 8 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone, 7 o'clock Central, and it's the Morning Show with Preston Scott, show number 4359. I'm Preston. That is Dallas Rogers. I can't help but laugh at the fact that I was joking last week about the fact that I like it when shows end or start on a round number. Like, I like it when Friday would be show 4360. Friday will be 4360, and it only took 2 days in the hospital to make that all work out. But that's what happened That's what happened earlier this week, folks. That's why we were not on the air on Monday or Tuesday. I've had a lot of people ask me. I was in the hospital. I won't go into details. But good to be with you, back with you, and feeling fine. Joining me on the program, the book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. He is from Breitbart.com. He's the entertainment editor, and he is our good friend, Jerome Hudson. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
Jerome, I'm going to be as charitable as I can be when I ask this question, and I know that it is totally outside of your control, but did this book need to be released about a month and a half or 2 months earlier?
It would have helped, I think. It would have certainly giving me an opportunity to talk about the amazing story that the president can tell about his administration, the accomplishments that he was able to achieve despite, let's just say, a tidal wave of headwind. It was completely out of my control. It's just one more thing we can thank the communist regime of China for.
The book is selling terrifically. I advise you to get it, folks. And if you don't have the first one, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know, get that too. They make great Christmas gifts. There's some things here, though, that are important, and I want to get to that. But Jerome, let me, because you are a very, very acute watcher of what's going on in the political world and what's going on in social media. So let me just get your take on everything as it stands right now. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, your home state, Arizona. The untold story is that state is not decided. But what is your observation of all of this?
Well, I'll tell you, my gut feels good about Georgia. It also feels good about North Carolina. And I do think that the gap for Joe Biden is just way too wide to make up in Philadelphia. The shenanigans, the malfeasance going on in Pittsburgh, notwithstanding. And I like the way that Arizona was trending through the night. I don't know if they're still reporting numbers. And so I have to hold out hope, Preston, but at the same time, recognizing that, you know, if the worst should happen, this is certainly not a time to take a knee. And I do recognize, you know, I spent 4 hours on SiriusXM radio last night, which is one reason why I can't see your pretty face right now during this interview. I just thought it not prudent to drive into Tallahassee from Jacksonville. But I also recognize that, you know, should the worst happen, my book becomes, I think even more pronounced in the way in which President Trump has reoriented the way that millions of tens of millions of people look at the role of government. They recognize if anything, Preston, my book is a testament to what can happen, what good that can actually be effectuated if we just elect the right leadership. So again, should the worst happen, the president is responsible for ushering in the largest conservative populist movement that we've seen in generations in this country. And that's something that we should be proud of, and we can certainly build on. We're already doing it in the House of Representatives.
Joining me, Jerome Hudson, the book 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. He's also the entertainment editor for Breitbart.com. My guest, Jerome, stand by. 70 seconds weather and traffic, and then we'll pick up and go from there. It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
They all adore it. They think he's a righteous dude.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Jerome Hudson, Breitbart.com, entertainment editor and author of a couple of different books. This one's selling really well. The other one's sold well as well. 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. I want to save the last segment to talk about specifics inside the book, Jerome. What do you think is going to happen as it relates to, number one, polling moving forward? It's not lost on me that after 2016, the polling industry allegedly made changes in how they were going to get to polling, and all it did was get worse. So at this point, are those of us that are just observers and consumers of media and polling, are we to just say this is an intentional effort to persuade people one way or another? Or is the science just irretrievably broken and lost?
I think it has to be broken and it has to be lost. I think that 95% of the polling industry needs to be dismantled. And much of that, Preston, is the media companies that align themselves with these polling agencies.
Right.
You can't trust a poll if it does out of Iowa if it doesn't come from the Des Moines Register. We're talking about a political press, Preston. Again, that they do their own polling. CNN, ABC, NBC, Washington Post. They do their own polling, and they also align with pollsters. But the media, Preston, they promise. They said they'd do soul searching, and they'd figure out how they got 2016 so wrong. But the Washington Post had Joe Biden up 17 points in Wisconsin. I like that the Trump administration is suing in that state because the numbers are phony. But Lindsey Graham, he beat Jamie Harrison by 20 points, and the Democrats spent $100 million. Susan Collins beat her opponent, Sarah Gideon, by 6 points.
And I want you to circle back to Lindsey Graham. We were told that that race was nip and tuck and that Lindsey Graham was making all of his decisions based on the fact that, oh, he might not get reelected. And the margin was 20 points.
Razor's edge. I think Lindsey Graham campaigned just last weekend. I think that was the first time he campaigned in South Carolina. I could be wrong. I swear, watching it, radio host, editor, and I was watching the video. I was like, I'm not sure I've seen Lindsey Graham on the campaign trail. We're talking about, we have to recognize that a lot of these pollsters are the same political press that castigated the president as a racist. And it wasn't just Cubans and Venezuelans voting for him in Florida. He won Dakota, Texas, which has the second largest Hispanic population in the country. The president won that county by 5 percentage points. Zapata County, Texas. It was a county that Obama won by 43 points and Hillary won by 33 points. They don't just miss this stuff, Preston. They don't give a damn about the issues of millions of Americans in this country that they are supposed to be reporting to, because they have cast off those voters as racist bigots for supporting a man with Jewish grandparents who moved the embassy to Jerusalem. The first thing he did, he's emboldened peace in the Middle East on a level that we've never seen before. He got 26% of the non-white vote. That hasn't happened since 1960. Richard Nixon, who got 32% of the non-white vote. No, the entire media establishment, along with most of the polling establishment in this country, should burn to the ground. Never watch CNN again. You may not be able to watch Fox News again after they called Arizona but waited to call Florida.
Good stuff, Jerome. Stand by. Get the idea, Jerome's on his game right now. On fire. My goodness gracious. Jerome Hudson with me. 50 things they don't want you to know about Trump. Breitbart.com. He's the entertainment editor. We come back. I'm going to talk to him about the one brutal fact, no matter who's the president. We are a divided nation. What's next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott?
FLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
And free.
And iHeart's radio station.
Did you see what happened in Alabama? Tommy Tuberville, the former coach, wins by 20 points the U.S. Senate race. 20 against the incumbent. 20. He dispatched Jeff Sessions, the former senator. He gets Doug Collins in the general and wins by 20 points. Jerome Hudson with me from Breitbart.com, author of the book 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. Jerome, there is one inescapable fact, and it is, regardless of whether Joe Biden wins, regardless of Donald Trump and anyone claiming a mandate, there is no mandate from America at this point. We are a divided country. So what is your best guess as to where we go from here under Joe Biden? Where do we go from here under Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think I said it earlier. There's no time to take a knee. We have to strap on the armor of God and recognize that we are a vulnerable nation. We've dealt with two blows, that the first of which was the coronavirus, and the second of which is a political class and a political media class that took, you know, a horrific instance in George Floyd's death. I don't believe that Derek Chauvin committed murder, but George Floyd was a disturbed man, and he was high on more drugs than I can even remember. I think he was going to die that day anyway. The point is that the political class on the left in this country and the political media used that to weaken, and I think an argument can be made to destroy this country. There are evil forces in this country, Preston. The people who founded Black Lives Matter, they don't want strong nuclear families, particularly in Black homes. They don't want police officers protecting the neighborhoods in which families live in. I don't hesitate to call that evil. It's certainly immoral and can't be defended and should be called out. And that, I think, is what we have to do. Those of us who know the facts, I feel like I need to write two books this year. I'm on a one book a year clip right now. I feel like I need to write two books. But we need to do more. We should recognize where we are. Right now, emotions are raw, and that always happens in an election year. I know we're divided politically, but neighbors are still neighbors. Families, it's tough. But again, I think everybody maybe needs to do a couple deep breaths, take the 30,000 foot view of it, and recognize that we are still blessed to live in the greatest country that God ever gave. that in all of the good things in our lives, our health, our families, and just appreciate where we are, but look ahead with some optimism of all the good things that I write about in my book that did happen over the last 4 years, regardless if the political press didn't report it or not.
A former statewide elected official in Florida just wrote me and said, I suspect Nevada, which sent mail-in ballots to every registered voter, will announce that Biden won the state. Biden and the media will claim he's at 270 and it's president-elect, even though Arizona is still in play. If Arizona then flips to Trump, they will claim Trump is trying to steal the election. He said, Arizona keeps tightening. When Fox called the state for Biden, there were still 600,000 outstanding ballots, mostly pro-Trump counties. There are still 400,000 uncounted ballots. Biden's lead is down to 69,000 votes. It's very possible that Trump wins Arizona. Do you subscribe to that theory, that that could be the play that we're about to see happen in the media?
I do. The New York Times, Preston, I don't know if you saw this, but they basically tweeted, and they deleted the tweet. But the fact that they tweeted instead that that calling the presidential election now falls to the media. You know, I recognize and still believe that the Silicon Valley masters of the universe, as we describe them, they do believe that they're all powerful. They control what we see in our social media feeds. I hate social media. But the political media in this country, Preston, they quite honestly believe that it is their power to say who is the president. When Fox News made that call, there were still people in line. It was 6:30 p.m. in Arizona. They made the call. It was 9:30 p.m. here again. And I reiterate, they had not called Florida for a President Trump that was up almost a half a million votes on Joe Biden. This is why I say you can never turn the channel. You can never buy the product that appear on these elite media networks. You have to stop supporting them in every way. They have to be gutted. The teeth has to be stripped out of them because they are a danger to the republic. It's unfortunate, but a lot of people rely on information. And I just can't imagine if I'm standing in line in Arizona and I hear that Fox News called it. There are seven news organizations that call elections in this country. Fox News was one of the seven that made that decision. The AP followed along about 4 or 5 hours later, but there were still five organizations that said, wait a minute, out of an abundance of caution. Remember that ridiculous phrase? We're going to hold off and not do this. I still don't know why Fox News did it, but I do think that the president wins Arizona. And I like him digging in heels. I like him suing in Pennsylvania, suing in Georgia, and suing in Michigan right now. He's going to have to fight and prove the fraud that's going on.
Jerome, I got to run, brother. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. I love you. Stay safe and be well.
Thank you, sir. Love you too. Jerome Hudson, 50 things they don't want you to know about Trump. Breitbart.com.
Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Thirty-six minutes after the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. Short segment here, longer segment on the other side. Sal Nuzzo with me from the James Madison Institute. Sal, how are you?
Doing well. Catching up on my sleep. How are you, sir?
Trying to do the same, but certainly not in these 3 hours, that's for certain. And the news cycle away from this has made it almost impossible to take a nap. So let's start backwards here, because Pennsylvania is going to drag on for a little while. But explain something about the whole United States Supreme Court and its relevance to Pennsylvania, what it did and what it may do.
Sure. Well, excuse me, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court issued a ruling on the electoral process in the state. That ruling was challenged, and about 7 or 8 days before Election Day, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that they were not going to take it up on an expedited process. Now, that didn't mean that they were overturning the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. What it meant was is that they were going to wait until after Election Day to determine whether or not they took it up.
Now, was there a vote in that? Was there a 4-4 ruling in that, or
what? It was a 5-4 decision. Roberts sided with the Ginsburg block and basically punted on it. So that ruling, though, is back in what they call it's back in cert. It is, and in fact, yesterday I was reading that they have already issued requirements to submit some answers to questions and things along those lines. I believe by the 9th is the date that I remember, but I may be wrong there. So they are going to take up that that ruling, and there's a very specific element of it that is of particular interest in terms of election fraud.
Explain.
Okay. So there is a provision in that ruling that says, and I'm going to quote it, ballots received within the period of Election Day to November 6th that lack a postmark or other proof of mailing or which the postmark is illegible should enjoy a presumption that they were mailed by Election Day. So what that means is if they get a ballot on the day after Election Day or 2 days or up to the 6th, and it has no postmark, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania ruled that those votes have to be counted. Now, that specific provision is going to be challenged at the Supreme Court. And my guess is that those ballots do, if I'm thinking through, that is a violation of Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, and that gets tossed.
All right, Sal, stand by. We're going to pick up right there, and we're going to transition from what's likely going on in Pennsylvania to Arizona, because Arizona's the story that's not being told. And for the life of me, I don't understand what Fox is doing, but we'll try to get a little insight. Sal Nuzzo with me. It's the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Beck, you want him on that radio.
America can handle the truth.
You need him on that radio. 9 to noon on WFLA.
Vice President of Policy for the James Madison Institute, Sal Nuzzo, with me this morning for a few more minutes. Sal, I think most rational people, and by that I'm immediately throwing you in the mix, would agree we've got to set national standards for mail-in voting on federal elections moving forward. Having said that, to me, the untold story so far, because there's a lot of attention focused on Michigan and Pennsylvania and Georgia and North Carolina, but no one's talking about Arizona, and it is a massively important story.
Yes, absolutely. And Arizona is the key on whether or not Pennsylvania even matters. So Trump basically has to draw to the inside straight twice. He's got to overtake or he's got to hold his advantage in Pennsylvania in the face of what's going on in Philadelphia with vote counting right now. But he's also got to overcome the advantage that Biden has, which is around 68,500 votes as of about 2 this morning in Arizona. And I was listening to Jerome earlier. I would agree with him completely. Fox completely blew it on making that call at the time that they did, and they did it before they even called Florida or Texas for Trump, where he had a 400,000-plus vote advantage. So that is the untold story, because if Biden holds on in Arizona, Pennsylvania does not matter. He hits 270, assuming that Nevada goes for him.
The numbers that I got handed by somebody that I won't name is that there were still 600,000 outstanding ballots from counties that lean towards President Trump when Fox called this thing on Tuesday night. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah.
600,000?
Yep. And that is not an insignificant number of votes in the state of Arizona.
No, it's not. I lived there for 20 years.
And so what you have is, and what I've been hearing from folks on the ground that are kind of giving me some information on what the counts are coming in as, when they are looking at those batches, Trump is generally winning them 2-1. And so he's got to carry, I think it's 54 to 57% of the count in order to overtake in the context of those 600,000 votes, and he's currently outpacing that. So Arizona should never have been called, and I would say Fox and other media outlets need to do some serious soul searching about how they govern when they make calls. I would suggest, and this was an idea I was thinking about last night, that it would be great if everybody agreed to never call a state when the expected result is less than 5%. Let the votes be tabulated. It's a standard across media outlets, and therefore everybody knows what to expect on how a state is going to be called and when.
Sal, can I take it a step further? Does it make more sense to simply say we don't call a state until the Secretary of State of that state calls it?
Well, you kind of run into some, you know, oftentimes the Secretary of State aren't certifying those elections till a week or so later. But I think in the majority of cases where it's a state like California or New York or Texas, the vote tallies are going to be well more than 5%. It's a safe call to make. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to lose sleep over calling Utah for Donald Trump. But when you get to these states that are less than 5%, I think you run the risk of running into more Arizonas, more Michigans, more Wisconsins down the road. And in a country as divided as we are, that is as mobile as we are, vote patterns are going to change. And so that's something I think I would love to see the media and others consider. But knowing who the media are, I'm not so sure that's going
to
happen.
So then that goes back to something I mentioned in the interlude, and that is this. The Congress, I think, has to take action to standardize federal elections from a mail-in ballot perspective, don't they?
Under Article 2, Section 4, they can. And I would agree with you that they should. And the interesting thing, and you've alluded to it directly and a little bit indirectly, the untold story of this all is Florida finally shedding the demon of 2000, having arguably the most transparent, easy to process, and easily reportable election in its history, over 11 million votes cast. And the results were collected, tabulated, and reported without any concerns by about 11 o'clock that night. We all knew it is an atrocity that every other state doesn't follow this example. And there are other models to pursue. I mean, I would be in favor of looking at putting votes on the blockchain, make it easier and use technology. Other places around the country are doing that. But at the very least, we can look to Florida as a model for how a national standard might look going forward.
Sal, thanks for the time.
Always a pleasure.
Sal Nuzzo with James Madison Institute. All right. An advisement, a piece of advice. When it comes to the post-election stuff, don't go down too many weird dog trails. You should know. There should be something inside that should just kind of tell you, this is a little out there, okay? Where there's smoke, there's fire. And I think there's plenty of smoke to look at in Michigan and in Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania. The media is responsible for Arizona. Arizona, to the best of our knowledge, hasn't done anything inappropriate yet. It's all about counting ballots, and I don't know why it's taking so long other than we need to standardize all that stuff.
This is the problem I have, that we're what are we now, a day and a half, 2 days away almost? And there's still places that have like 400,000 or 500,000 ballots that haven't been counted. How does that work?
There are still places that have until tomorrow to receive them. That's absurd.
Yeah, that's
you know.
Why do we bother with a day? Then why don't we just say you got to get your vote in November?
How about this? Steve Stewart made a point. He said, you know what? It's worth taxpayer money to open the polling places for a week.
Yeah,
open them up for a week, in person voting for 1 week, and only mail in ballots for these exceptions. Military, sick. That's it. Bottom line is this. There needs to be a change nationally. I'll be pushing our congressional and Senate representatives, Rick Scott, Marco Rubio, Dr. Neil Dunn, Al Lawson in our area. I will be pushing them for legislation. All right, that's number one. Number two, don't get your eye off the ball. Don't lose credibility by pushing out a bunch of fanatical, weird stuff pushed out by Alex Jones, okay? Don't go there. Just don't go there. Just let's just see what happens. Don't lose faith. Let's demand transparency. Let's demand accountability. If the president lost, that's fine. I can accept that. I can. I just want it to be fair. And move from that point. I do want to say this. We have our Operation Thanksgiving underway. We raised $700 yesterday. Our goal is $10,000 by Thanksgiving. We can do this. 500 people, $20 per person. That's it. That's it. Go to SamaritansPurse.org/WFLA. Morning Show 180. Look at the program in 180 seconds or less. We did talk to Steve Stewart, Tallahassee Reports. Got his thoughts on polling. He's in the media. That's what, the, you know, he's a consumer of data. That's Steve's strength, is data analysis. Grave concerns with where polling is in America. You heard Jerome Hudson weigh in on that. He's the author of the book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know About Trump. He's from Breitbart.com. He said, I think very clearly, even with Fox News, you just have to push away. You just have to push away. Fox News is losing its edge. And you mark my words, they will lose viewers over this. They're losing their place as being the place to go for impartial news. Opinion, I'm fine. I can separate that out at Fox. But they're starting to lose their place with news, and that's a problem. Bill Zimfer joined us, Dr. Steve Steverson on pet problems. Good show today. A lot of stuff. There's a lot of moving parts tomorrow. Sheriff Walt McNeil of Leon County will have FSU head football coach Mike Norvell on tape. I'll be taping that interview in just a bit. We've got What's the Beef Friday. We'll find some good news in the midst of this. You can bet your last dollar I'll do that. And if I can't find a story, I'm going to redirect you to our Operation Thanksgiving. Again, you can go to the Facebook page or, again, just go to SamaritansPurse.org/WFLA. Give what you can. Let's raise that money and do something good this Thanksgiving. Have a great day.